Good morning. Today is a Friday. It's the 12th of April. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire Chief Sean Robertson, but he brought along a sidekick. Well, okay, maybe a friend. I don't want to put you in that corner.
He's a friend.
You see his expression? Oh, I'm just a nice little guy. He's my friend.
I consider him a good friend.
All right. Morning, Russ.
Morning. Glad to be here.
Oh, boy. Are you guys ready for your question?
Sure.
He didn't tell you about this, did he?
No, but I'm ready.
There you go.
Oh, really?
In the fire service, we're always ready. It says it on my truck.
Oh, really?
It says always ready, always willing.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I'm going to stay away from Christmas. That was the last one.
Okay, whatever you...
Yeah. Are you confident enough to take on Christmas?
Well, I think I am, pretty much 2 for 200, so...
All right, we'll go Christmas rather than animal. How's that?
I don't know what I'm getting into right now.
Yeah, I understand. How much weight does the average person gain over Christmas?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm just going to... 25 pounds.
There's no way. 2 pounds.
2 pounds?
25 pounds?
How much are you...
I was thinking Christmas Day, 25.
I'm thinking, unless you pack frozen turkeys on your back when you step on the scale.
Well, I guess, is it just, what's the time period it's defining? Is it just...
Well, probably the Christmas holiday season, Thanksgiving to New Year's.
So that could be a month.
25, a pound a day? You eat a whole lot better than you look.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. That was too much. We'll go with Russ's.
All right. In the Middle Ages, Christmas banquets started at 3 in the afternoon with appetizers and fortified mulled wine, followed by 10 main courses, and lasted until midnight. Today, over the holidays, North Americans consume 24 million turkeys and 112 million cans of cranberries. Go cranberry. We drink 108 million quarts of eggnog and 89 million gallons of liquor. The average weight gain over the Christmas holidays, 4 to 6 pounds.
Okay.
25.
That's America.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. So, Sean, why'd you bring Russ in? Other than to share the pain.
No, to share the joy.
Oh, the Christmas season. Sorry, I forgot.
Many times in our conversations, you ask me about the volunteer or county fire agency perspective, and I give you my opinion on that, and I think it would be great to hear directly from people dealing with that dynamic, and I thought it'd be great to have another voice, so... I invited Russ to come and provide that, and I would like to keep having other chiefs in the county come and show up and give a different perspective because, in our pre-show chat, Russ was already talking about some of the huge differences and challenges, frankly.
He did have a great line that got you laughing. Do you want to take credit for it? Or you want me to ask him the question so he can use it?
I don't even remember.
I don't, yeah.
Okay.
You should ask it.
Yeah.
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 So what is the job of a primarily volunteer fire department fire chief?
Surprisingly, it has very little to do with firefighting. And has
now laugh uproariously, Sean, because that was the line, and you laughed before.
Whatever I thought the job was going to be when I took it, it was not what it ends up being. You spend your day dealing with a lot of things that make a fire department work more than firefighting or fire training or those things. You become that leader that has to, do everything from take the trash out to maintain your equipment to, that building needs to get repaired or that sink needs to get fixed and those kind of things.
So you're kind of like a private business owner.
Yeah.
Small business owner.
Yeah. In my world, we have 3 paid employees and the rest are all of our firefighters are volunteers. So somebody's got to man all those hats. So, we can pass it around, but we can only pass it 3 ways. And so one of us has to put that hat on and do that task.
And if somebody's on vacation or sick
that was yesterday and why I had to deal with the situation I had to deal with yesterday.
Increases the load 50%.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
What is the biggest difference between Sean with your department, not size-wise, but a paid staff versus a primarily volunteer staff?
Is that me? You?
You answer that one.
Okay. You know, As I said earlier, I would love the opportunity to know who's going to be on my engine company, know their strengths and weaknesses, and I can work on those and train them to get to a certain point. I don't have that luxury. I'm not sure who's going to be on my engine and what their capabilities are, because they're going to be vastly different. And so, you know, that would be a luxury that I don't get to have that would be refreshing. You know, in a volunteer world, you know, it depends on time of day, it depends on day of the week, who's going to show up. So it could be Monday during the day is different personnel than Wednesday during the day, and certainly different than evening time when everybody comes back home from work and, you know, I have much broader opportunities or more folks responding.
How quickly or how flexible can you be if you're anticipating, let's say, 10 folks and three show up because of time, conflicts, in town, out of town, whatever it might happen to be? Is that, you just have to be that fluid?
Yeah, I think that's the challenge that all volunteer leadership, you know, struggles with. You know, you get to scene and you have a plan in your mind of how you want to attack this scene, and that could change with who shows up, how many people shows up. You know, just to think about going interior and keeping up with that two in, two out rule, you know, that might be a second engine, and that might be 6 minutes into the scene before that second engine, or 10 minutes into the scene before that second engine, or even longer if you're somewhere else. So
it really changes how you manage those situations.
Yeah, and you definitely have to be fluid and be willing to adapt and change on the fly.
Okay, there's an animal reference there, but I'll let it slide.
Is a fly.
Is a fly an animal?
Something that's in America. I don't know. Did you have flies growing up?
In Africa?
Yeah. We also have this game called baseball flies.
I'm shaking my head right now.
Oh, okay. Good.
With disdain.
I figured that there was some kind of a medical issue that Russ might be able to help you out during the break with. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson and Russ Brown. Fire chiefs, plural. Okay. Uh-huh. Hi.
Hi. There's a few of us around.
Yeah, exactly. What about the training, Russ, for a volunteer department? You know, I think, Sean, is it written in either the employee contracts or in the department charter, if you will, or mission statement, how many hours of training have to be done to maintain certification and what you want to do and a formalized training program?
Yeah, we have policies. There's some in the MOU, and then there's state requirements we try to follow.
Are those the same, Russ, for volunteer departments?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the hazards that my folks face versus Sean folks are the same. The situations we're sending them into are the same. You know, we started a fire academy 17 years ago now as a way to get, you know, in the volunteer world, it's tough to get people trained to be useful, to be safe, to actually be able to be a resource on the scene. And it was taking us too long to do that. So we put together our own academy to get our people up to speed quicker. And that expanded to other departments asking if they could send their folks.
Me too.
So, yeah. And so now 17 years later, this year's Academy has started with 31 students. I think 28 stuck it out. This is our last week. But we have folks from Willow Creek. We have folks from West Haven. You know, it used
so they're hauling in that from those distances.
They are because we're the only academy around. We tried to get one up in the North Bay, which is Sean's area, Arcata area, and that lasted a couple of years, and then it kind of went away. And Southern Humboldt's just got on board. They've got a training tower through Measure Z, and that's kind of sparked their interest. So they've had an academy the last 2 years. But for the longest time, we were the only dog and pony show, and so. Basically, it's a probationary academy that follows the same NFPA rules and training requirements as anybody else would do. And it just now allows basically any fire department that wants to get their new members up to speed, they can send them to our academy. We've been able to offer it free of charge. Nobody has to pay anything to attend it. We get donations to support it and fund it. And it's been one of the biggest, brightest things that we've been able to offer at Fortune of Fire to the whole county is a way to get new firefighters, you know, ready to go a lot faster than waiting 12 months on one topic a month. And if you miss ladders, it might be 2 years before you got ladder training.
Do they teach you bad pun seminars also?
Do they teach us bad what?
Pun.
No.
Sparked interest?
No. That's all you.
Well, that's all natural.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. At least I picked up on it. You were just you guys have mentioned MOUs or agreements that you work together, respond together. I would think that a volunteer might be as passionate about fire and fire prevention and medical aid and all the other stuff that you code enforcement that you guys do as the paid staff, because it's kind of novel, or it's a calling. Do you find that there's as much turnover in the volunteer ranks as there is in the paid staff, or do they last longer, or is it a different breed of cat? I mean, how does a volunteer compare to a paid?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever thought about it in that context. I think that both, you know, career staff and volunteer staff have the same problems. We have the same, you know, retention and recruitment problems that anybody has. So I think there's some similarities there. You know, I don't have the 10 to 15 year volunteer as often as I used to. You know, they don't stick around that long. But I don't know if that is directly related to the volunteer world, or, you know, new generations of folks just don't stick around for anything.
Or burnout.
Yeah. And it's easier to not get burned out when it's not your job. You know, it's certainly probably a little bit of that, you know, it's something they do on the side.
Yeah, so, the novelty
So, I mean, I don't see paid staff that live in my town volunteering, you know. So, you know, it's kind of like if you're a mechanic, you don't volunteer to be a mechanic at night. So we certainly have some career staff that live in Fortuna that don't volunteer because, you know, they do that for a living. They don't want to do that in their playtime as well.
How does Cal Fire's CDF interact? Is it the same with a volunteer department as it is for a paid staff? Or, you know, is everybody kind of on the same team, or is there delineations and distinctions?
I mean, I think we all have our roles, but at any point in time, we could all be working together on any incident. And I have sent my equipment to Sean's department. Sean has sent his equipment to my town for emergencies. And, you know, we've both interacted with Cal Fire on a regular. I mean, Cal Fire's headquarters is a couple of blocks from my station.
That's right. I would think that it would be really commonplace.
You know, and because resources are limited on both ends, you have to help each other out. There is no, you know, doing this alone anymore. You know, if you know, I'm the biggest fire department in the valley, in the Uber Valley, but if I break a structure fire, I certainly can't do that by myself. Typically, I'm having to call my neighbors, because it's just, you know, you can't staff enough paid staff. You can't have enough volunteers to handle something that's going to take that long or that many people without asking for help.
Well, I would think you'd always want to have plus three anyway.
Yeah,
and safety net.
We're pretty quick in Fortuna to call our neighbors. You know, I'd rather have them on the way and cancel them than to be 5-10 minutes in and think, oh crap, I need them. And none of us care. Nobody minds helping out their neighbors and getting canceled halfway there. That's just part of life in the volunteer world.
Well, then they can swing by Bob's and pick up a hot dog.
Yeah. I'm glad Bob's is open.
Yeah.
I had to throw a little local flavor in, huh?
You did. Good job.
You like the flavor reference, too. Just another one that went right over your head.
I'm just taking a back seat today.
Yeah, apparently.
He's pretty quiet over there.
He's just kind of... I'd say arm candy, but I'm not sure you'd qualify. I don't know.
To the right person.
Yeah. And she's not here, so.
Yeah.
Looking at what we're dealing with, he's falling asleep in the corner. Okay, good. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fire Chiefs Sean Robertson and Russ Brown. Staffing is an issue. Training is an issue, obviously. Cultures are different, though, aren't they? I mean, we have the historical, the pot-bellied stove, everybody hanging around or having various limited fundraising opportunities that are part of America. Sean, Americana is like history of America. Americana from the 30s and the 40s and the 20s. Obviously, that's wildly different now than what it was. But there's still that nostalgia associated with a volunteer fire department. How accurate is that?
I mean, I guess it depends on what volunteer department. The bigger you are, the closer you get to a career fire department. We have a staffing program, so we're probably staffed over 70% of the time. So those people are much more akin to a career staff. I mean, they live at the station, they eat at the station, they have living quarters at the station. So, that role kind of changes into where... there's not a whole lot of difference, but for the rest of the folks, they're at home, they're waiting for their pager to go off, they're responding to a call the same way the siren goes off, that alerts them still. So there is still sirens out there for some of you folks.
For those of you in Arcata, there are these things called noon sirens.
We certainly have our share of folks that don't like that siren and want it to go away.
That's bizarre. I would think that would be not only a feeling of comfort, knowing that somebody's there responding, but that's part of the sounds of the town.
I had a fellow recently that his house caught fire, and as I was getting ready to leave after we put the fire out, he asked me when that siren was going to go away. I said, "You mean the one that just got all these people here that saved your house? That siren?" So there are folks that it's just annoying and loud
they just don't get it.
Yeah, and ours only goes off for probably 10% of our calls. Ours goes off for structure fires, traffic accidents, and something unknown. If we don't know, then we do an all call. But for probably 90% of our calls, it comes across our pagers or our phones or.
I used to think that was because we can hear some of the sounds from Arcata from here. The noon whistle would go off. That, to me, that's part of what we are.
And
to have that not happen, I still miss it. 20 years later, 25 years later? Maybe Chris will bring it back.
I grew up in a small town in Oregon, and we had a sawmill in town, the same thing. You had the mill whistles, and when the mill went away, the town, after a few years, decided to put the whistle back up, and so it still goes off.
Oh, but, cool.
Really? Just for nostalgia purposes that you grew up hearing it. And
Yeah,
that's a part of it. So what's the biggest challenge?
I think for me, it is, where's my next firefighter going to come from? You know, the younger generation has less time to give. They learn different. You know, you had to train somebody in 8-second bites. You know, they can YouTube something faster than I could teach them. So that's how they learn. And so, you know, where's my next firefighter going to come from, and how much are they willing to give? Because, you know,
there's a scale of commitment, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, we tell everybody in our department that you're going to give up your Wednesdays. That's the day we meet, train, you know, so you give up every Wednesday for the rest of your life. And then all the other times that come with fires and other trainings and things like that. So, you know, the commitment is big. And so that scares a lot of people away. But we try and be honest up front. You know, we try and meet with the family unit together and explain the situation and what your commitment really means. Because family's got to come first, job's got to come second, fire department, the volunteer world is third. So we need to make sure that they understand that, so that when we do get them, we can keep them for a while. They're not just there for a year and realize, man, this is way too much.
Yeah, doing the battle. Yeah. Now, when you say Wednesdays, is that Wednesday after 5?
Yeah. So all of our, you know, in the volunteer world, you know, all your stuff takes place in the evening. So, you know, you're going to give up your Wednesdays in our case from 6:30 to 9:30. You know, every Wednesday for the most part.
Too bad it wasn't Tuesday night, huh?
Doesn't really matter.
Well, if it was Monday, you could invade the city council chambers.
Yeah.
Give them an instant crowd if you want.
I don't know. For whatever reason, it seems to be Wednesdays and Thursdays. That's the 2 days that people train in the volunteer world.
Really? Yeah, that's kind of the industry norm.
Yeah, you're either a Wednesday or a Thursday. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe Mondays and Fridays are just bad because people are gone, taking vacation. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to think it wasn't Monday Night Football.
Nah, football's not that exciting anymore.
No, it's certainly a different game.
I'm a soccer fan.
Back to the cultural thing, do you do much like community get-togethers or like family-style parties or just picnics or things with all the volunteers?
Picnic in the park. Kind of thing.
Not really. I mean, we do a lot of community events that, you know, there's not an event that happens in Fortuna that the fire department's not typically involved in. You know, we're one of the players that people like to see fire trucks and firefighters. And so, you know, we participate in that. You know, we do a picnic every year where, you know, all the members or families and exempts and folks come back out to get together. And, you know, that's when you see some of the, for me, it's when I see some of my mentors and some of my folks that are still out there and people get to, the younger folks get to meet the names that I talk about, because they're, you know, there's a reason our street's named this. There's a reason that this street's named that. There's a reason that this is called that, and that's because of him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's cool for the younger folks to get to meet some of the folks that led the way before they got there or even I got there.
One of the things that I am is a history geek. I know, Sean, you got a couple guys that are trying to maintain the historical for the fire department stuff. I would think something like that would be so way cool if you could either tape them, record them, have them write down, you know, so that legacy, that history, one, is easily retrievable, but secondarily and more critically, it exists. You know, I start thinking about, I've been doing, I don't know if I've shared on air or not, my hit by a bus plan. You know, that renegade bus that's roaring, running around the country, you know, threatening to kill people. Yeah. Okay, if I'm hit by a bus. And it's amazing how, not fatalistic, I'm getting doing this stuff, but how much I'm realizing is retained by me. You know, whether it's the family history or certainly company history. And that when I'm gone, whenever I'm gone, it is too. Mm-hmm. And that loss. And I would think, you know, for you guys, your departments go back so far, and you've got some of the older fellows that are still around. What a shame it would be to lose that. Kind of like when Sam Mitchell died. There was a lot of stuff that he had. Mitchell Heights had a lot of stuff, but it was all in his head. And when he died, you know, 30 years ago, it went with him.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, Campton Heights. Where'd that come from? There's a story.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a story. But the new kids, the ones that may have just relocated or didn't really pay attention to local history until they got like 30 or 40, they have no clue. And where do they go? I mean, sometimes even the historical societies don't have that information. So,
you know, we
how
do,
cool
we do,
that is.
We do a pretty good job of picture memory. You know, we've got a lot of photos, and that seems to stay. It's the names of the people in those photos. It's the stories of those people in the photos that get lost over the years.
The names on the tombstones.
Yeah, my grandkids' daycare is done by a daughter of a former firefighter that I served with 35 years ago. And I found an old photo of her dad looking through some stuff and said, you know, hey, would you like to have it? And she goes, yeah, I'd love to have that photo. I don't have that many of my dad. So, you know, the stories need to be shared because that's where those memories get passed on. You know, the photos can be a mechanism that prompts that conversation. And I mean, I started one the other day with a fire truck and an old photo, and somebody says, hey, any idea where that fire truck is? And I said, well, matter of fact, I think.
Ding, ding, ding. Well, the 64, 55, you know, the major floods that we were around for, you know, from a fire perspective, it's totally different than what we, you know, see, you know, the house floating by or the cow floating by. Well, it has nothing to do with what you guys did as a department at that time. Just cool stuff. One of the things that people have talked about over the years is the career fire. That one or two major fires.
Mm-hmm.
What's yours, Sean?
Oh, man. I guess the first one that comes to mind is the fire at 3rd and G Street.
The old Globe Imports?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we encountered things that I've never encountered before. That was the hottest fire I've ever been in. And we were there all night, and it's been vacant since then, and that was 2007. So that was a pretty significant one. And that's the biggest old town fire we've had, and that's, you know, one of our bigger fears because we have a lot of the balloon frame construction there and all the, you know, it could take out a whole block if we didn't get on it quick.
I would suspect that with that all block reference, that might have been your
that's an easy
career
one.
Fire. Yeah.
That's an easy one for me.
Yeah.
You know, the Star Hotel fire for us, literally 40 feet from my house.
Oh, wow.
I did not have to respond. I had to walk out my door and look up. You know, that was the first time I realized that excavators were firefighting apparatus.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Okay. I had the same experience on my big fire.
I did not know that, but it's in my bank now of resources. Because if I'd utilized it sooner, I probably could have saved half a block.
Dad used to have a thing with the cabin, which is up in Trinity Village. If there's a fire, make sure it burns all the way down.
Yeah.
Do you guys get those edicts from owners? You know, if it's starting to go, I would rather have it go down than try to remodel.
Yeah, and in our world, it doesn't work because we have to investigate. We've got to, you know, it's got, you know, as much as you want it to burn the rest of the way, we have a different mindset and a different goal.
Yeah.
And if you're at the other end of the building throwing gas and shredded tires on it, that would be frowned upon?
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:46.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:51. We're back talking shop this morning with Russ Brown and Sean Robertson from the fire departments. Career fires are one thing. What about career days? Is that something that fire departments, whether volunteer or paid, have much success? You know, doing the tours and, you know, let them pet the dog and slide down the fire pole and, you know, all those types of things that don't exist. hands-on to kind of ignite the passion, not fire, ignite the passion for the career?
Yeah, I mean, we try and participate in every career day that's out there. We participate in any, if there's a chance that we can send our message out to some folks to try and recruit another volunteer, we're there. We want to be a part of all of that. So, you know, we're pretty easy to get. You know, you want us at your event, we're going to use that as an opportunity to try and recruit as well, because that's how, you know, that's how we get people excited about what we do.
What are the requirements for somebody if they want to be a volunteer? Or, I know we've talked, Sean, about a career, paid staff.
Yeah, we've changed from the volunteer firefighter for our agency to a cadet program because we're having a recruitment issue. So you just have to have a high school diploma and a clean driving record, and we'll pay for everything within 2 years for you to get hired on with us.
Well, you work in tandem with Russ's department. If let's say you have a volunteer that is really serious and really you have confidence in, will you
sure
give the name up?
You know, we've had a few of our folks that have been hired by Humboldt Bay, so you know we encourage that. You know, I want my folks to succeed in life. You know, and whatever part I can play in that, cool. But yeah, if we can get them and that's what they're passionate about and I can't offer them a job, then sure, I want to try and make sure that, you know, I steer them. And I would, as hard as it is for all of us here locally, I would certainly want to help my brothers and sisters out locally with people rather than send them somewhere else. Those people have a big enough pool of people to draw from. We're limited up here. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm always going to try and get them to stay local.
If folks want to find out more, stop by the station, give you guys a call.
Yeah, or visit what's both
the best
of our
way to
websites.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah, Fortuna Fire also has a great Explorer program.
Yep.
That's frankly
Explorer
been
Fire?
Yeah. You betcha.
For high school students.
They'll give you a compass and everything.
Whoa.
They'll show you the way.
Have a good weekend, guys. Thanks for coming by, Russ. See everybody on Monday.